is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, where Summer Studio Theater Company productions begin on June 16th. Visit KrannertCenter.com for information about the plays Einstein and the Polar Bear, Dead Guilty, and The Matchmaker. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine here on AM 580 WILL Urbana. For this portion of the program, we dip into the Afternoon Magazine archives for an interview that Celeste Quinn did in April of this year. Since it is an archive, we will not be taking your phone calls.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Marilyn Johnson is, like many of us, drawn to the obituary page in the daily newspaper. But she's more than a reader of obits. She's written the obituaries of, among others, Princess Di, Jackie Onassis, Katharine Hepburn, Johnny Cash, Bob Hope, and Marlon Brando. On the program today, a look at the history and practice of obituaries. Marilyn Johnson is our guest. She is the author of The Deadbeat, Lost Souls, Lucky Stiffs, and the Perverse Pleasures of Obituaries. Let me share with you an excerpt from the first chapter of the book. The New York Times comes each morning in a blue plastic wrapper and never fails to deliver news of the important dead. Every day is new. Every day is fraught with significance. I arrange my cup of tea, prop up my slippers. I open the not-yet-smudged pages of newsprint. Obituaries are history as it is happening. Whose time am I living in? Was he a success or a failure? Lucky or doomed? Older than I am or younger? Did she know how to live? I shake out the pages. Tell me the secret of a good life. Have you had the same sense of wonder when reading the obits? It also holds true, I think, for people who have died who don't get a headline when they die. There is a hint of the essence of a person's life in the lines of an obituary in the local paper. Marilyn Johnson has been a staff writer for Life and an editor at Esquire, Red Book, and Outside. Her book, The Deadbeat, is published by HarperCollins. Marilyn, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
My pleasure, Celeste.
So who's in the New York Times today?
The New York Times today, yes.
Have you had a chance?
I did read it. I read it online this morning. But what the obituary world is buzzing about is that one of our very own won a Pulitzer, and that was announced. Jim Sheeler for the Rocky Mountain News, who is one of the people that I profile in the chapter on the new egalitarians, the people who are writing obituaries of the so-called ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
Has been honored for his work covering the soldiers who've died in Iraq.
Hmm. I'm glad that he has been honored. I think that this corner of journalism has been often neglected.
Yes, yes. So, and as for who has taken off, well, it wasn't very interesting today, one of those rare days.
Yeah. I thought the obituary of Louise Smith was rather interesting, though.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Yes. I'm sorry. She was known for her spectacular crashes.
Yes. 89 years old. She was a NASCAR driver.
Yes.
In modified NASCAR events. I'm not sure what that is.
Women.
Powder Puff NASCAR. Anyway, she's quite the character.
Married to a junkyard owner who didn't approve. And she would take off in his car and he'd say, "What happened to that car?" "Oh, that old piece of junk," she'd say. And he'd unfold the newspaper and show her. No, he knew it was not an old piece of junk until she wrecked it on the NASCAR circuit.
Yeah. Quite a character. One of the first things that you write about is the interesting, sometimes eerie coincidences we see from time to time on the obit page. You want to talk about that?
Yes. The most spectacular one was the first that I encountered, which was a Saturday obituary for the scientist who isolated vitamin C, which appeared right next to the obituary for the scientist who isolated vitamin K. And I never really got over that one. They really happen all the time. I noticed there have been four Kentucky Derby winner owners who have departed this earth in the recent past. Two of them died within a day of each other.
Mm. Where does that take your imagination?
Well, I think there's a great pasture up there that is contained. and it also makes me wonder how many Kentucky Derby winners have there been? How many Kentucky Derby winners are still alive? I'm really one of those people who would just love to see the website of a newspaper go further, you know, go behind the scenes and tell us answer these kinds of questions.
Hmm. Like, what exactly is entailed in a modified NASCAR event?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Question desk.
You know, white gloves and skirts, or I'm not sure. You know, you say, and I think you're really very right on here, that obituaries are capable of containing a lot of drama.
Mm.
Tell us about the news story you used to open the chapter you've titled Ordinary Joe.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, this is... one thing that's really... really interested me when I was writing my book was it's not just the big metropolitan papers doing more interesting news obituaries. It's also the big metropolitan newspapers doing stories about ordinary people, and they've brought such amazing details to bear. I was sitting in bed reading the LA Times. I live near New York. And I came upon a story about the pursuit of a murderer. This was a man who had beheaded a screenwriter in a Los Angeles suburb and then climbed the fence and broken into a neighboring house and stabbed a doctor who was on the telephone making reservations for a trip to San Jose, we were told. I found this an irresistible newspaper story. At the end, it says, the perpetrator was apprehended as he sat on a wall under a row of ficus trees near Melrose Avenue. He had a Bible and a small can of mace. He seemed like a perfectly normal guy, the landlord said, but he was always in a rush. I put the newspaper down, and I said to my husband, I see obituaries everywhere. I see this kind of colorful detail, and... people are drawing for us with a full array of crayons the incredible world around us. We're not getting the whole story when we watch the sitcoms at night. We're getting formulas, and in fact, the world is just as complicated and interesting as a story like this would lead you to believe.
Yeah. Now, reading that story and reading obituaries that are compelling, is the act of writing them as compelling? It must be.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, you know, I found this when I was writing celebrity obituaries. I was writing most of them in advance of the person's death. And I found that just sitting down and imagining a world without them put me in a heightened emotional state. And many of the obituary writers that I talk to feel the same way. They feel privileged to be addressing this task. They feel privileged to speak to the survivors, and they know that they may have written 5,000 stories, but this is the one moment for this person. This is their final bow, and it's completely up to them to bring every power that they have in them to render it unforgettable.
Hmm. You know, I'm really pleased that Michael Connelly's latest book is about another, you know, often overlooked journalism beat, and that's the crime beat and the court beat. There's so much drama
mm-hmm.
there as well.
Mm-hmm. There's an overlap in the obituary writers. Some of them have retired from that very beat and find that it's healing in a way. I mean, for one reason, you're sitting behind a desk usually as an obituary writer. You don't have to go out and interact with the people that you interview, the survivors, and obviously the subject that you're writing about is gone. When you're a street reporter, you also have a lot of bad news, and the bad news we've already, in a way, dealt with once we get to the obituary page. Somebody else has broken the bad news. Obituary writer's job is to remember the life and remember everything that made that life special and made it so it would be something that we could appreciate and participate in.
Hmm. When and how did your passion for the obituary begin?
Well, I have to say, Dr. C and Dr. K really lit fire under me. I realized as I was reading these very different obituaries with these marvelous parallel Nobel Prize-winning discoveries at the heart of them that I was reading a story in which all the drama had been focused through an individual's biography. And I started reading, in particular, the obituaries in the New York Times, which does marvelous obituaries. I noticed that they did stories about women that I wasn't reading anyplace else. I was not seeing it on the television news. I wasn't reading about it in the news section of the paper or even the art section. And these were stories of women adventuresses or adventurers, women who had been spies in World War II, women who had been famous mistresses of powerful men, women who had been the first ones to barnstorm the country in a little airplane. I mean, you know, I was getting like this, you know, a woman who had spent her life diving off of mules. And I was reading these things and going, this is like, there were so many different ways to be a woman that really don't make it to the children's books. There they are. And I was entertained and I was moved.
Yeah. Diving off mules.
Oh, the famous mule diving, yes. And that was the detail that made me realize what wonderful detail work the writers were doing because the mule was named Red Lips.
Hmm. I don't know where to go now.
I'm sorry. I can't remember a lot of things, but
there are things
in the obituary.
They're going to stick with you.
I'm bringing all my attention to it.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, journalist Marilyn Johnson. She's the author of The Deadbeat, Lost Souls, Lucky Stiffs, and the Perverse Pleasures of Obituaries. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon. Join the conversation with a question, a comment. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL, 333-WILL. We've got a couple of listeners waiting to talk with you, Marilyn. Let's go first to our first caller. Listener in Indiana, line 4, hi.
Hello. After a number of faux pas over the years, I'd like to know, ask one thing informational, then a couple questions. Is there a site on the web that's good for finding out whether a person is, you know, persons that would show up in the newspapers, for example, at least, that would show, you know, when they died and that sort of information? And secondly, have you ever written an obituary for a friend of yours? And did you approach it differently than you did for somebody else? And thirdly, how does one get in the obit page of major newspapers? Hmm. What are the characteristics or properties of that situation?
Good Thanks. Questions.
Eternal questions,
mm-hmm.
Yes. Let me see if I can address them in order. Some of my book, I deal with some of the resources on the web, and I'm dealing with them as information. There are several websites, the Dead People Server and whosaliveandwhosdead.com, which deal with celebrities, which help you track down celebrities, and IMDb.com helps you track also people in the entertainment business. I mention these in the appendix of the book and also write about them in my own trolling around the web. What there are a lot of people who are interested in genealogy these days, and they have tremendous resources at their fingertips. And legacy.com is a place that really tries to get put everybody online and help you track. Unfortunately, they don't have all the archives up, and it's only recent deaths. But you can track. You'd be amazed how many things you can find if you sit there and give it some time.
Okay.
The second question is, I believe, about friends of mine. I have not written obituaries of friends of mine. I'm with some of the people who say it's so much harder to write about someone that you know. If somebody really wanted me to do that and left that request, I would do my very best. But I find it much easier to capture a life in a short amount of space when I don't know a whole lot about that life.
Mm.
I think the closer you are, the more difficult it is. So those people who have written no obituaries, they say, except perhaps for their father or, you know, their sister, my hat's off to you. That I think that gives you a tremendous amount of credibility in my book. And the third question was,
how do you get on the obituary page of a major daily newspaper?
Well, die on a day when no one else dies. I think that's, it's like any breaking news. There is a competition for the space. And what you would do if you wanted to get a person you know or leave instructions in your own case is just make sure that the person on the obituary desk knows the salient facts of your life and has that to shuffle around and possibly assign a feature writer. If you participated in a battle in World War II, if you invented something incredible that we couldn't imagine life without, or if you said something immortal, make sure that's included. If you're another lawyer who did some wonderful charity work and left a lot of happy children, I'm sorry, that's really a story that I think that they see very frequently.
Hmm. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Champaign, line two. No, we're going to go to a listener on line one, in Charleston, Illinois. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I'm intrigued with what you do, and I wanted you to know, there probably are other people that have told you that some of the things that we do with young people who it's a prevention technique when we're doing creative writing or anything like that, is to imagine that they're writing their own obituary. And I know it sounds moribund, but it really gets them thinking about in terms of futurity and what they really want to leave as a legacy. Mm-hmm. And we come up with some wonderful examples. And so I'll get off the line and hear what you have to say.
I've been hearing of this, and I applaud it. I think you get a wonderful perspective, and it's something that rather naturally occurs when people hit middle age, turn 50, start looking back on their life, when you realize that you are writing the story of your life, and, you know, you can make it interesting or dull. You don't get to say what you get dealt. Dana Reeve did not. She was going to have a really nice life with a cute husband and act on the side, okay? And everything was going great, and she was handed this horrific challenge, and she rose to the occasion with such grace and generosity and such class, and she dealt with her lung cancer. I have such admiration for her. Her obituary appeared on the page behind Gordon Parks, who lived to the age of 93 and had, I don't know, six different lifetimes. He was, you know, he was the first at this and the first at that, and, you know, photography and music and, you know, movies and activism. He was marvelous. His obituary was a bit longer than hers, but both of them were the stories of people. He had been the son of sharecroppers, and you know, he'd been dealt a really lousy hand on the front end and managed to take his incredible drive and talent and write an incredible story of his life. She was cut short at less than half of that, but still managed to take what was given her and create something memorable.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Marilyn Johnson, our guest this afternoon. She's the author of The Deadbeat, Lost Souls, Lucky Stiffs, and The Perverse Pleasures of Obituaries. Other questions, comments are invited this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I hadn't realized this until I opened your book, but some people clip obituaries and save them.
Yes.
Would never occur to me, but...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I have...
Now I'll start. Now I'm maybe going to be hooked on this?
Yes, well, or you could save them to your desktop, you know.
Mm.
Creates less of a mess in the office. Yes, I have a poet friend who collects literary obituaries. I collect coincidences, of course, and I also collect pioneers in the headlines. I have a lovely pioneer collection.
Yeah. You know, not everyone shares this passion of yours. How do you talk about what you do, as they say, in polite company?
Well, you know, I have to be a little bit careful because it's not just my enthusiasm that ends up dominating the conversation. When people start talking about obituaries, if they have not developed a fascination with them, they are immensely curious about it. There's an endless font of examples, you know, interesting things I could tell you about the obituaries. I mean, it takes over a conversation. And, you know, I really had two terrible situations that I alluded to in the book. One was I was visiting a friend who had just recovered from a terrible illness in the hospital. And, you know, how's your work going? And I made the mistake of starting to talk about the book that I was working on at that point. And it's not appropriate to talk about in the hospital. It's not appropriate when somebody is, you know, 8.5 months pregnant to start talking about obituaries. I do feel now that I should just zipper my mouth in those situations.
Hmm. Well, speaking of a polite company, there are a number of euphemisms we use for death. Aunt Edith passed away, or we lost Uncle Ed last night.
Mm-hmm.
Have there been other euphemisms people have used about death that have passed on?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. My favorite came from the Houston Chronicle. She went accidentally to Jesus.
Wow.
Which I think is a brilliant phrase. Really tells me everything I need to know. A lot of people are very uncomfortable saying the word died, and I think that does us all a disservice. It's where we're all going. It's going to happen to all of us. It's very rare the person who has not had someone close to them leave this earth, you know, have their spirit separated from their body, and, you know, and bringing that sort of hushed, we can't say anything ill about the dead because it would be disrespectful to them, does us all a disservice. We know we're all human. You know, we can see it. People magazine acknowledges that everyone's human. You know, there are very few stone cold heroes left. It rings more true when you know that the person who, even though they would qualify as a saint, used to get unnaturally irritated in traffic sometimes.
Hmm. When you write an obituary, how do you think about the language, the choices that you make in terms of, you know, I don't know if you'd ever, you know, pen accidentally went to Jesus.
Yes, no,
yeah.
I would not ever
yeah.
say that. I try to make it as, it's a balancing act, because what you're trying to do is make everything as vivid and fleshed out and all there as possible. You're trying to use every tool at hand, and you're also trying to not to draw attention to the writing. You're trying to let the story speak for itself, and that's actually much harder to do than you'd think. I think that's the trick of it, is to get out of the way. You know, tell the story with as many trumpets as you can bring to bear, but not to have people focus on necessarily on the byline. You want the character to come to life. You want to bring them back to life for their curtain call, and you want to be able to know that person by the details about the, by the telling details of their life.
Mm. And it's an entire life. It's just not one tiny episode.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Hunter Thompson at the outset of the book.
Yes.
And, you know, we saw little slivers of his life near the end. But then when he died, we got again a picture of the man.
Uh-huh. It, larger than life character.
Right.
You know, he had been, he'd certainly been written about enough times during his lifetime, but his star had set in a sense. He was not at the forefront of American journalism or of the outer edges, the interesting outer edges, as he had been before. And his what his death did was give you that necessary step back to say, this man changed our expectations about what we read about nonfiction. He changed, you know, the acceptability of someone having a point of view. You know, this the illusion of objectivity is, the idea that I could even use the phrase illusion of objectivity came from him. You know, his outrageous stylism in the service of telling stories and his stunning originality. I mean, this man was, you know, was he right wing? Was he left wing? Who knew? I mean, drugs and guns and, you know, I mean, what a character.
Mm. Let's talk with another listener, a listener in Champaign on a cell phone line one. Hi.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I have one quick comment and then a question. I do know some obituary clippers, and I'm not one myself, but it's an interesting topic. And a caller earlier asked about websites. I know you mentioned a couple. I wanted to mention one more, which is deadoralivinfo.com, I believe. And one thing that I would like to see there is obituaries. They talk about who's dead and who's alive and when they died and how and so forth, but I'd like to see obituaries, and maybe your guest could somehow hook up with one of the websites to start supplying obituaries there. My question, though, is as a society, it seems that at least I'm struck by the notion that when someone has died, someone famous, and you see information about them in the media, that not only as a society are we reticent to say anything bad about somebody who's died, but suddenly they become more and greater and bigger than maybe they ever were in reality. And I guess I'd like to hear some comment on that notion, and I'll hang up and listen on the air. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, you know, one thing that the New York Times does, which is a wonderful service, is in addition to the day's obituaries online, they also publish obituaries that appeared on this day in previous years. So you can read Louisa May Alcott's obituary or Hitler's obituary. And it's like a review of something that becomes a classic. I mean, you can see right away how someone was misjudged, you know, with the perspective of time. So I think just as a historical imperative, you really want to get it right. And you want to stand behind what you say as an obituarist. You want, you know, was Don Knotts the greatest second banana in history, or was he was just a guy that a lot of people like to work with, who was able to make some people laugh? I don't know personally, but I think it's important that you figure that out in the writing of the Don Knotts obituary. And there is a place on the web where a lot of obituaries get posted, and I wrote a whole chapter about this news group called Alt Obituaries. I access it through a Google portal, but it's a Usenet group, and you know, all kinds of obsessed people read papers from all over and post their favorite obits. They're basically stealing from the newspapers that are online, but they also perform a lot of services in addition to their thievery. They sort of balance it out. In fact, some of them actually put some of those old obituaries, will type them in so they're in the record, and Usenet keeps these things forever. I mean, you can go and use the little search thing to search for a particular person's obit, and if anybody's ever posted it, you have access to it, which in terms of the library function of it, I think is revolutionizing our world.
Hmm. Well, we've been told never, you know, speak ill of the dead, but there are some folks writing obituaries for the Daily Telegraph in London who who have no fear of that, not reticent at all. Tell us about them.
Oh, they're marvelous. Well, they actually, it's with great relish and delight that they send off a villain or an eccentric. They just love to tell you things like, you know, someone was not notably monogamous. Or I have one, you know, they also love their old military heroes. And I have one in front of me for Major Cuth Adami. And Major Adami by day could be found relaxing on the island beaches, clothed in little more than a wraith of cigar smoke. And it says that although he was long pursued romantically by a particular woman, he successfully defended his confirmed bachelor status. He impressed local elders when he lived in Kenya with his readiness to eat the most disgusting-looking delicacies, of which sheep's eyes were by no means the most offensive. Hmm. There's a great delicacy in there, in their willingness to mock people.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the one, the obit excerpt for Hugh Massingbird, the third Lord Moynihan, who has died in Manila, aged 55, provided, through his character and career, ample ammunition for critics of the hereditary principle.
Yes. And then they detail all of those. Yes, some of them are so funny.
Yeah, and that is so British. So that leads me to ask, you know, how are obits similar? How do they differ around the world?
Well, you know, that gives you a sense of it. You can't really imagine an American paper saying things like that, you know, putting someone down with such high-flown language. That really doesn't happen here. You know, they may be blunt, but they really don't relish telling you those wicked stories. I think there are a lot of different kinds of obituaries. There are the obituaries of ordinary people that you read in the United States and Canada tend to be more sentimental, and they're telling stories that are really quite marvelous about poker-playing nuns and, rascally personality janitors.
Mm-hmm.
The news obituary at the Washington Post and the New York Times and the LA Times, they play it rather straight, but they've been including a lot of marvelous details that give you a third dimension to the characters that they're profiling.
Yeah.
When you go over to London, they're just they're telling you they're writing entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned the character obit.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Jim Nicholson.
Jim Nicholson is Jim Nicholson was an investigative reporter who had been just about everywhere, I think, when he was operating a New Jersey bureau out of the back of his car for the Philadelphia Daily News in the early 80s. And somebody said, well, that's an awful lot of talent to go down the drain. Why don't we give him a shot at the obituaries? We want to make an obituary page here for the second newspaper in Philadelphia. And his idea was, yeah, that sounds like a good job. And since we're the people's paper, I think we should do ordinary people. And he brought all of his skills, his inspired writing and his considerable ferreting out skills to tell us actual real stories about the people who died in Philadelphia. Teachers, local politicians, garbage men, nuns. I mean, you got stories that were absolutely compelling. Homeless people. Because they were infused with his knowledge, he would just ask 1,000 questions of their survivors. Mm. And then they got married, but not because they had to. That's one of the things that he said.
Yeah. You know, if obituaries like that were more common in our papers, I think we might look at our neighbors in a completely different light.
Mm.
You know, the people we just bump into. You know, you don't know who that person really is.
I had a nurse come up to me after a reading who said, some of the people who've been appearing in the obituaries lately have been on my ward, and I had no idea.
Mm.
How fascinating they were, what amazing survival stories they had, what they had done for their community, how they had risen to some challenge or other. It's lovely to hear, to presume that we each have an interesting story if only someone gifted enough could ferret it out.
Our next listener who wants to speak with you, Marilyn, is in Edgar County on line 4. Let's go and talk with this listener. You're on the line with Marilyn Johnson. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I also enjoy the Telegraph obituaries very much because they cover such a wide spectrum of people,
mm-hmm.
as you said, both villains and, you know, heroes. And both of them end up being told rather truthfully. But the point I was wanting to make is William Sloan Coffin just passed away,
mm-hmm.
and he was a man of considerable interest, and I knew him at Riverside in New York, and his eulogy for his son 10 days after his son's death in an auto accident is probably one of the most beautiful obituaries you would ever want to read, and you can find it online, and it was just extraordinary.
I'll look for it. And also,
in January, they had in the New York Times, of course, I enjoyed Whitman when he was writing obituaries.
Alden Whitman?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
He was a great writer.
Uh-huh.
And, but the thing is that 105 years ago, the obituary for Queen Victoria gave me more historical information of the British history I ever thought was possible.
Uh-huh.
I copied that off because it was such a rich story of the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just to be able to read it 105 years later was extraordinary. So I do appreciate the New York Times running the past obituaries.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to bring William Sloan Coffin's
thank you
eulogy.
Thank you. It sounds very worthwhile. Well, I was very interested when Slobodan Milosevic died. It was a great way to catch up on the history of that area by reading his obituary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the same is true for almost everyone who dies. They, you know, these people whose contributions to the art of jazz are fabulous reading, or the blues singers, and there the British papers are mad about some of the people that we barely notice in our obituary pages. The Independent and the Guardian are both wonderful sources when characters in the music business die, for instance.
Well, I really appreciate the British style of presenting their people who have, excuse expression, passed on. But you did bring to the, one of the people that I obituaries that I keep obituaries, by the way,
mm-hmm.
because, for one thing, my family kept obituaries and of friends and, you know, family and such as that, and so I've just continued on the tradition. So I have a huge file of people who have gone on to another life. And but the one obituary which particularly struck me was, I guess it must be 8 years ago when the beat poet, now his name is gone from my, Ginsberg.
Ginsberg,
Allen,
of course.
Ginsberg.
Allen Ginsberg, who I knew in some fashion, which is the way you knew Allen. but I think they did. They had I think it was close to, I think it was 3 pages in the New York Times when he passed away, and they even printed his poem that he had written for his mother when she passed.
You know, he was a marvelous opportunity to talk about a history of the United States that's hard to capture in other ways. And it's, you know, Allen Ginsberg filtered through the New York Times. You got to be interested. That's wild, right?
Mm-hmm.
The New York Times trying to figure out how to weigh the contribution of Hunter Thompson. I just love them when they tackle the people who were really out there.
Yeah, and yet at the same time, I think that they treated him with more reverence than perhaps he might have been treated in, as we say, in the English newspapers, where they noticed, you know, the little blemishes.
Well, you know, the British newspapers also were very dismissive of Susan Sontag's intellectual. She was sent off as a great intellectual here, and you know, she was pretty much sniffed at in the British papers. They do not get a certain kind of American over there. That is, I think that really is one flaw of theirs. Allen Ginsberg, I wouldn't necessarily trust them to get him completely. They certainly they sort of turn their heads a little bit at the Southern style of ordinary person obituary. It seems very, the folksiness of it just, you know, kind of gives them the creeps. And I think they miss it. You know, they miss the boat there because it's a folk art.
But yet at the same time, they have a folksiness about the way that they skewer their own.
Oh, yes.
And I remember when that rugby player Best passed away just a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
They served him up well.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. With aplomb, no doubt. Yeah. We have to wrap up pretty quickly here. One thing to maybe we can end on is, thanks to this last caller, in the book you say, like poetry, obituaries have had their flowery period, their bleak period, their modern period. Where are we at the moment, do you think?
Oh, we're in the modern period.
Okay.
I think we're in, I think people are paying attention to it, and I think people are reading obituaries from around the world, and they're just getting better and better. I've been noticing this. It's really a marvelous thing for a writer in a kind of dusty corner of the newspaper to realize that there are people reading them who don't have to read them, who are reading them because they want an insight into the culture. And that's, you know, it's caused a lot of people to sit up straight, and they're writing, I think, quite beautifully. Mm.
There we'll leave it. Marilyn Johnson, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste. My pleasure.
Marilyn Johnson is the author of The Deadbeat, Lost Souls, Lucky Stiffs, and The Pleasures and the Perverse Pleasures of Obituaries. The publisher is HarperCollins.
And that interview comes to you from the Afternoon Magazine archives. Celeste originally recorded that April 18th of this year. It's 1:50 Central Time. Time now to see how the Board of Trade and the Merck wrapped up for the day. settlements should be in from the Board of Trade. And with those, here's Todd Gleason.
And then the market will continue to fall after that.
Well, we will get Todd Gleason here in just a second. Coming up in the 240 segment, we've got Talking About Talk, the Year of Languages in the U.S. Now, here's Todd Gleason.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
It's all right.
We were just discussing what a dead cat bounce might be and what a definition looked like for one of those. So we were doing our job, just paying attention. Dave Dickey and I are paying attention to something that was happening in the marketplace, and we were making sure that we understood what that term might mean. And in fact, it is just a bounce that happens at in a commodity where the commodity might trade higher. When it is actually in a downtrend and then turns around and just simply continues to fall. And there was some discussion of whether that's continuing to be the case in the soybean market. We'll, of course, talk with Mike Susilo about that this afternoon. Beans, as you might have guessed if you're listening, are on the upside today. Despite the fact that they're in a downtrend, they finished anywhere between 3 and 7 cents higher today. July futures in the Kansas City wheat pit, that's where we always start, finished like this for the afternoon. They had a high today of 467. They're low at 4.59, settlement price at 4.62.5, and they were off a penny and a half for the day. September futures are 4.75, high low at 69, and the settlement price at 4.72, and they were down 3/4. Taking a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade now in the wheat pit. Futures finished the day like this. Had a high price of 363.5, a low at 358. Settlement price at 359 for the July wheat. Soft red winter wheat down 2.5 cents today. September futures, 380 the high, the low at 74.5, and the settlement price at 376.75. They were up a quarter. December contract, 398 the high, the low at 392.25. Settlement price at 393.5. They were off a penny and a half. And the March futures, 411.75 the high, the low at 408. Settled at 409, down 2. May contract, 420 the high, low at 417. Settlement price at 418. And they were off 2 for the day. July corn futures, 236.5, the high, the low at 33.75. Settlement price at $2.35.5 a bushel, up 2.5 cents. And the September's, 248.25, the high, the low at 45.25. Settlement price at $2.47, up 2.5. December futures, 262.5, the high, the low at 59.25. And the settlement price at 261.25, up 2.75. March futures, 273.5, the high, the low at $2.70, settlement price at 272.25, they were up 3. And the May futures finished like this, 279.75 the high, the low at 77.5, and the settlement price at $2.78.75, they were up 2.25. July corn, 287.5 the high, the low at 84.75, settlement price at $2.86.25, up 2.75. And September futures, 291.5 on the high, the low there at 288.5, and September 07 corn settled at 290.75. They were up 3.25 for the day. July corn, or rather July oats now, 201 the high, the low at 192.75, settlement price at $1.90.